It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In her debut novel, Such a Fun Age, Kylie Reid draws incredibly insightful and nuanced character studies. Her characters are people that you will recognize. And in fact, you might just find yourself looking over your shoulder to make sure she's not watching you. The central character in the novel is Amira. She is a 25-year-old Black woman who graduated from Temple University, and she's not quite sure what she wants to do with her life, so she's making ends meet by babysitting for an adorable, precocious, almost 3-year-old named Briar. This book is about race and class, but it's also about human nature, good intentions, bad behavior, and our glaring blind spots. Reid is a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop. She now lives in Philadelphia. She will be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on Friday evening at 7 p.m., and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Kylie.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And I described Amira a little bit at the beginning of your book. She gets a phone call. She's at a birthday party with friends. They are out at a club, as 20-somethings are wont to do. And she gets this phone call that she's needed to do a little bit of emergency babysitting. Tell me what happens.
Yeah, so she's out for her friend Shawnee's birthday, and she gets a call saying, "We've had an emergency. Can you please take Briar out of the house for a few hours? I'll pay you double." And at that, Amira perks up. I know in my 20s, friends' birthdays and weddings were so expensive, and she's just done a night of big entrees and birthday gifts, and she says, "Absolutely, I'm coming on over." So she goes with her friend Zara, they pick up little Briar, and they go to a high-end grocery store called Market Depot. They're having a great time, they're laughing and dancing. Zara leaves to go to a guy's house, and then a security guard and patron of the store accuse Amira of stealing this child because they can't really fathom why a very dark-skinned Black young woman would be with a young white child. And it goes downhill from there very quickly.
Well, and you know, as we mentioned, she's come from her friend's birthday party, so she's also dressed for the club. She's wearing heels. She's had a couple of drinks. And here she is in the store late at night with a small white child.
Exactly. Yeah, and it seems all, you know, especially to Alex Chamberlain, the mother of Briar, it seems all very innocent. Amira warns her, you know, I'm out. I've had a drink or two. Is that okay? And she says, "I do not care what you look like. Please come and take my child." But obviously the night's events kind of turned wrong. And then Alex sets out to make it right again, sometimes very fumblingly as she tries.
Yes. And we should mention that at this grocery store, when the security guard comes over and confronts Amira, there's also this man in the grocery store who decides to film the interaction in an attempt to keep Amira safe, is his intention.
Absolutely. There's a lot of good intentions in this novel, for sure. But yeah, his intentions are very good. He says, like, "Are you okay? Do you want me to film this? Do you want me to call the police?" And she, you know, understandably is very humiliated. And I was really excited to explore what that kind of moment looks like, because the ones that we see on the news most often are the horrendous and tragic violent ones. And I was really interested by the low to the ground domestic terrors that a lot of Black people face on a day-to-day basis that doesn't end in violence, but is still just as traumatic.
Absolutely. And knowing that this video is out there, Amira has to make a decision about whether or not to publish that video. And she,
right, it sits as a, yeah.
Yeah, she does not want to. Why doesn't she want that to be public?
I think there's a few reasons. And when I was teaching at Iowa, I loved doing an exercise with my students about a character's surface wants and their deeper wants, because there's always both. And I think on a surface level, she thinks, you know, I was angry, I was embarrassed. I don't want my picture on, you know, the internet as I'm looking for a job. I just want to forget this whole night. But I think on a deeper level, she feels, I don't want people knowing that I babysit for a living right now. Her parents don't know. She feels like she's kind of behind her friends in terms of like career and financial things. And she just kind of wants to hide a little bit. And I think it's really tragic that Amira, in this really racially charged moment, kind of blames herself for putting herself in that position when it's really not her fault.
Right. And she does absolutely nothing wrong and actually handles the whole situation really well.
She's pretty good. I mean, she loses her temper, as I think I would as well, which is some of the power dynamics that I was really excited to explore. There's a moment where Amira says to the security guard, and she's getting really heated, she says, "I'm making money right now, and I bet I'm making more than you." And in that moment, I mean, that's a really classy thing to say, that if someone with more power had said it, it would be taken differently. But in that moment, all she has is the fact that she's making $32 an hour, and she's trying to use it the best that she can.
Let's talk about her employer, Alex Chamberlain.
Yeah.
So this is the woman that Amira babysits for. And Alex Chamberlain is an Instagram celebrity. Tell me about her.
Yeah, she has a business that is all about taking it back to basics. She writes a lot of letters. It extends into a feminist bend of asking for what you want, of getting a promotion, of getting a job, of establishing equality for women. But unfortunately, the way that, you know, feminism can work in some cases is it's kind of keeping all of the women at the top very happy and not really extending it to the bottom where it should be helping the most. But that being said, on paper, Alex has wonderful girlfriends, both white and black. She can be a really good mother. She's really savvy, and she really does care about Amira. But I was really excited to show how people can both fetishize and other someone and care about them, which I think is almost a little bit scarier than just one or the other.
Well, and she, I mean, she really has very strong feelings about Amira, her babysitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you describe it as kind of like a girl crush.
I do. Yeah. I think that we can all be guilty of, you know, thinking someone is very cool, or whether it's an album or a book or a country, but the balance between them, the fact that Amira is her employer, is employee, is what makes the interaction so cringy and inappropriate at some moments. Alex has a bit of a nervous energy and really cares what Amira thinks about her, which I think is normal and human. But the fact that, you know, she's her employee, that's where the boundaries get stepped on.
Well, and when I mentioned your incredibly insightful and nuanced character studies, Alex Chamberlain, you paint such an incredibly detailed picture of her by giving us these little details that give us so much insight into who she is.
Good.
And she's so recognizable. But, you know, so here she is. She's a wealthy white woman who has had this very successful career. She is married to a man who he's a news anchor. So he's also doing very well, although not a superstar in the world of being a news anchor. But in talking about her, so much of what she does, she's got these two tiny kids, a toddler and a baby, and she is a good mom, as you said, or at least she can be a good mom, but so much of what she does is performative. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I love hearing you say that that these characters are familiar too, because that was definitely the goal of presenting someone who, you know, you see often at the gym, or they're in the next cubicle from you, where their intentions are really great, but it's when you look, take a step back and you look at what their impact is, it can get a little bit messy. Alex really feels alone in this moment. She's just moved to Philadelphia unbegrudgingly, and she misses her girlfriends, and I think that she's looking for a connection. And the way that, you know, late capitalism happens a lot is that she ends up looking for it in the person that she pays to love her children. And so I was super inspired by reading books about class inequality and wealth, and the way that we talk about wealth, and more importantly, the way that we hide the fact that we're talking about wealth. And all of those interests kind of led me to Alex. And I think that understanding her as a symptom of greater problems really let me show her strengths as well as her weaknesses as a character.
Well, and I want to drill down a little bit on something you just said, because you said that the person that she pays to love her children. I mean, we talk about childcare. Mm-hmm. We pay people to care for our children. But especially for Alex and for a woman in her position, it is more than that. She's not paying someone to take care of her child because she just needs to keep the child alive through the day so she can go to her job. I mean, she wants more from this low-paid position.
She does, for sure. I could go on and on about, you know, domestic labor and emotional labor. I think it's so fascinating, from days of slavery to domestic workers not getting rights that they deserve, and to now when it is a job that, I think in Philadelphia, I think 16,000 people of color are still doing it for very, very low wages. But yeah, it's this weird dynamic where Alex, she's a mom, and she's constantly asking her babysitter, hey, can you pick her up from ballet? Can you feed her? Can you put her to bed? And then suddenly the questions turn into, can you have a glass of wine with me? And that's essentially like, you know, do you want to be my friend? I'm a little bit lonely. And for someone like Amira, who's in a vulnerable financial situation, it seems like she can't say no. And those are the weird tensions that I think are where the line starts to be broken. And not to mention, you know, Alex, in her trying to be, you know, best to Amira, she thinks, let me make this girl family. But the problem with that is she denies herself the employer role, and she doesn't give her things like, you know, sick days or a chance for health insurance or all of those things that you probably wouldn't give your family members. So, yeah, it gets really complicated.
Well, and we should also point out that Amira loves babysitting Briar. So, yeah. I mean, that's an important part of the dynamic as well. I mean, so many people who are involved in this line of work in domestic care give so much of themselves, their hearts and souls, for very little pay because they love the people they care for.
They do. It's a really complicated thing. It's really, I was a nanny for 6 years. It's really hard to not love the little tiny people who you spend your day with, even the hard ones. You love that hardness about them sometimes. And so Amir's in a really rough position in that this isn't paying her bills properly. She doesn't want to leave the child because she loves her, but it's not a sustainable job for her. That all mixed with Alex becoming more and more interested in the wrong parts of her kind of doesn't set her up for success too well.
Well, and we need to take a break here, but one of my favorite things about the book, too, is that Briar, the little girl, is really a developed character. You really captured an almost three-year-old so brilliantly, and I felt like I knew Briar as well as I knew the other characters. We are going to take a short break. We are talking we're talking about the new book, Such a Fun Age, by Kylie Reed. It is her debut novel. She's a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop, and she now lives in Philadelphia. She will be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City Friday evening at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Kylie Reed. She is the author of the new novel, Such a Fun Age. It is her debut novel, and it's a novel about race and class. It's a novel about people with good intentions who do bad things. It centers around a young woman. She's 25 years old. Her name is Amira, and she just graduated from Temple University. She lives in Philadelphia. She's not quite sure what she wants to do with her life, and she's babysitting to make enough money to live on. It's also about her boss, Alex Chamberlain, who is a wealthy white woman who is also kind of an Instagram celebrity. And we were talking about Alex Chamberlain before the break. I want to talk about one of the other main characters in the book, a man named Kelly Copeland. And he is the guy who's at that grocery store, and he films Amira when the security guard is questioning her right to be in the store, or questioning whether she has kidnapped Briar and taken her to a high-end grocery store, which is, I guess, what somebody would do with with a child.
Yeah.
And so he takes this video. Amira does not want to release the video, but she runs into him again later. So we get to know him.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about him.
Yeah, Kelly is from Allentown, Pennsylvania. He works at a design tech firm as a coder. He has an unusual and strange amount of Black acquaintances and friends in his life, as he has for some time, and you discover why as you go into the book. But he's really charming. He has kind of like a dad humor thing going on. He's really tall. And what was really important for me was kind of allowing the reader to date him in the same way that Amira does, and gather information about him slowly. Sometimes he messes up and says the wrong thing, and Amira chooses to ignore it. And sometimes he's really cute and he nails it. She's like, okay, I really like this guy. And I had so many readers say to me, oh my gosh, I didn't know how you want me to feel about him. And I think that that confusion is exactly what I wanted, because I think it's really true to dating someone. You go back and forth a bit. And especially for someone like Amira, who's 25, she's not trying to find, you know, her husband and soulmate. And so she's not too sure about Kelly. And so that's where I really wanted to center around him.
Right. And he's significantly older than she is.
He is.
In fact, just about the
years.
Okay, just about the age of her employer, Alex Chamberlain.
Exactly.
In fact.
Yes. Right, right. They do have a lot of similarities that are demonstrated in very different ways. Yeah, and they do not get along too well.
So in Kelly Copeland's character, he has some definite flaws. He has some definite pluses. And Alex Chamberlain, too. These are two people that it would have been really easy to villainize. And you write them so that the reader has sympathy for them. Was that hard to do?
I think I love when books allow me to zoom out and look at the pressures being put on someone to understand like how they got there in the first place. For example, with Alex, her loneliness being taken away from her friends and her hometown, and you know the fact that it's all up to her to decide what to do with the babysitter. She's a bit on her own with that. I think she's responding to these things sometimes in good ways and sometimes in bad ways, and that makes her a full person. I hate when a novel tells me what to think about a person. I love making up those decisions on my own, but I also think when you show the fullness of someone, it goes past good or bad. You know, I'm sure if I watched The Little Mermaid from Ursula's perspective, I'd be like, oh my gosh, this poor woman. Like, she's so misunderstood. This girl is just having such a time with her. I think point of view is really important. But I will say that empathy and sympathy and getting those things from a reader is not my priority. My biggest priority is just a really gripping story with real people in it.
And as I mentioned before, I mean, race looms really large in this book. Amira is Black. Mm-hmm. The other two main characters are white. And that is a big part of the dynamics between all of these people. But class or socioeconomic circumstances loom even larger. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if you're writing a very modern story like this one, you have to write about race and class, and I don't think you can talk about one without the other. There are many different white and Black people of all different incomes, and I think it was a place for me to explore how white supremacy can seep into everything, and it doesn't, you know, stop at skin color. There are women who are really, you know, not okay with Amira's rejection of careerism, and I think that that's another example of racism as well. And Alex, you know, the mother of Dreyer, doesn't have a problem talking to Black people as long as she has class solidarity with them. And I think that's what she doesn't have with Amira. And those things are really terrible in the real world. But as a writer, I think that they're fascinating. And so I was really excited to dive into these class dynamics, because the nuance of them, when you find those little things that are resonant but shocking, I think those are really good writing moments.
You mentioned that Alex doesn't have any trouble with Black people who are in her social class. So she has one of her closest friends is Black. And
exactly.
And her character is really, really interesting to me as well, because as Alex is trying to figure out how to navigate her relationship with her Black babysitter, she is turning to her friend and asking, am I doing the right thing? How can I do this? And tell me how she responds. It's Tamara, right?
Tamara, yes. Tamara's a really fascinating character in that she, you know, has a lot of respectability politics that she feels very strongly about. And that's why I think her and Alex get along. With Tamara, I was so excited to depict a high-end, high-income Black woman who sometimes can code switch in a really uncomfortable way, which is something I think a lot of Black people are familiar with. And as a writer, it was really important for me to just drop the reader into it, where sometimes Tamara is speaking like Alex, and sometimes with Amira, she's speaking in a completely different way. As I think that that's a familiar thing for a lot of Black readers. She's interesting. She's really opinionated, and she, like a lot of friends, sometimes gives really terrible advice. But I wanted her to be able to be true to herself in that way.
Well, you also, the these women, all of these women who are in their, I guess they're low 30s, and you know they're successful, high income women, and they all have children, and this is what's brought them together. They're mommy friends, also very recognizable, as I mentioned. Just making sure you're not looking at me and over my shoulder as well. But as these women connect with each other, you show this divide between them and Emira because they are all driven career women. And they very, very strongly feel that Emira should be too, because here she is, an intelligent, beautiful 25-year-old Black woman who's a college graduate. Mm-hmm. Why can't we push her to do better?
Right. I think that that's such an effective both racism and capitalism working together. And I so remember when I was a nanny and when I was a babysitter and I worked at Godiva Chocolate for 3 years. And I remember so many people saying, okay, so you work here, but what do you really want to do? And I always thought that was so fascinating because at the time I did want to write, but I couldn't help but think, but what if this was okay? Because I do really love being a nanny, or like I am fine being a receptionist right now at this part in my life. And I think that those questions were some of the things that drew me towards a character like Emira. She's not hurting anyone. She's trying to live her life. And her rejection of this huge goal is almost an affront to some women, both white and Black.
Right. Nobody is willing to accept that she's relatively content with where she is in her life.
For right now. And she's only 25. It's all very relative.
Now, in the book, you write a lot about money. And I've read that back when you were workshopping the book at the Iowa Writers Workshop, that some of your colleagues question that. Like, why? Why do you mention money so much? Tell me about those conversations.
Absolutely. I actually had a wonderful workshop here at Iowa with the novel workshop. That was my favorite one for sure. And it was one of those questions that I'm glad I received it, because on one end, I thought, ooh, I want to really lean into this uncomfortableness. If people are uncomfortable with me talking about money, I want to do it even more. But it did make me shape the language around how people were talking about money. And so instead of using, you know, dollars and cents, I would use words that symbolize money, like classy or high end or, you know, respectful, things like that, that, you know, reflect income, but they're not quite being said. There's a lot of scenes where Alex is reflecting upon Amira's belongings and her clothes and all of those things, even though she isn't saying, you know, these are not nice things. She's talking about the money of them. And I think that that's really common. And so I wanted to definitely keep that uncomfortability level high throughout the novel.
Well, and Emira talks about money or thinks about money all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also part of this class divide, because she has to think about money all the time because she has to make rent every month. And that's not something that people in Alex Chamberlain's world think about at all, because it's a given that they will be able to pay their mortgage.
Right. Even with Amira's friends, she's constantly thinking, oh my gosh, how are you guys affording these vacations we're supposed to be taking? Because I'm going to lose money from being there and like not being able to take a vacation day. The worlds are just so different. And it leaves Amira in this place where she's thinking, you know, what did I do wrong to put myself here?
Well, and she also, you can see that when she does get her hands on a little bit of extra money, the temptation to spend that money is overwhelming. And in some cases, she gives in.
Oh, yeah. And I have to say, when I was in my 20s, I also had a bit of a precarious financial situation. And if I ever got any extra money, I would save, because I was like, you know, careful to a fault about it. But rich people, poor people, they're like, you know what, I'm going to spend it. And I wanted to give Emira that freedom. When she comes upon a couple hundred dollars, she's like, oh, this is going to be a leather jacket. That's what that's going to be. And so she's a real person, and she walks away with a leather jacket sometimes.
So I don't want to give away anything in the plot, because the way that these characters interact is fascinating, and it is surprising, and you save surprises for up until the last page of the book. So I don't want to give away anything. But one of the interesting things to me is that the characters don't necessarily learn anything. We learn a whole lot about them and why they've made the choices that they made and what they've done. And we're in a position to judge them for what they've done. Mm-hmm. But for most of the characters, we don't get to see them learn and grow. Why is that?
Right. So I would maybe argue that some do, but I think you're totally right that a lot of them are pretty stuck in their ways.
Maybe the ones that we most want to learn and grow don't.
Okay. That is totally fair. One thing that I learned in workshop with Paul Harding at the IO Writers Workshop was about how memory works in novels. And the way that I've seen it work in my family and friends sometimes is that even when something didn't happen the way that you remember, the more you tell yourself that story, that's kind of how it solidifies in your mind a little bit. So I think I was trying to be really honest to the truth of experience of how memory works. And unfortunately, some people, you know, racially charged instances make them even, you know, more steady in who they are and almost unteaches, you know, some good habits. And so I want to be true to those characters, even if it hurts at the end and they don't learn as much as they should.
All right. And it does hurt. It also, I mean, it leaves leaves me feeling a little bit hopeless, too, because, I mean, as a reader, I think I learned some things and that's good. But it it also makes me think, oh, my gosh, nothing's ever going to change.
I mean, one thing that has. Well, one, I love to talk about the truth of experience for Black women. And I think, you know, it's not giving away any spoilers that, you know, Amira doesn't win the lottery at the end. She doesn't end up, you know, living in a house as nice as Alex's. And I really wanted to be true to the experience of Black women and that, you know, they do come into a much lower income bracket. But one thing that's really been inspiring to me in the past 6 months is I live in Philadelphia. And in October, Philadelphia passed the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, which is basically creating a contract between domestic workers and the families they work for, whether they signed one or not. There's a scene where Amira wonders if she should quit, and she thinks, I can't because I can't put in a 2 weeks notice. This isn't a real job. I just wouldn't have a job. But now in Philadelphia, that's what would be required. Things like sick days and vacation days and overtime, all of those things have been fought for. And so her life would look different if it happened now. And so it may not have the most hopeful ending, but I am so glad that changes like that are starting to happen.
You had a really hard time getting into an MFA program.
I did.
Which, after reading this, I have a very hard time understanding that. But multiple rejections, and you wound up here in Iowa, which we're very glad that you did.
I am too.
Then this debut novel has met with so much excitement and really almost immediate success. What does that feel like after that struggle?
I mean, in all of those times when you're deleting pages and wondering if you should do, you know, keep going or if you should just get a job in copywriting and call it quits, it feels like those long nights were actually informing the work that you're doing. Obviously, what I have in front of me is the finished product, but there were so many other novels that had to come into play before this one could go. And it's been really inspiring in that, you know, this is probably, you know, the seventh or eighth novel that I've written, but it's the one that hit. And I'm so glad that it's the one that's resonating with people, because I think that its accessibility and satire hits people in a really special place. And that's been really exciting to watch.
And you are working on a screenplay for the novel, right?
I am. I'm executive producing with two production companies, with Sight Unseen and Lena Waithe's Hilmengrad, and it's a dream come true. I'm very excited.
Wow. Can you, I know that it's impossible really to know, but do you have an idea of what the timeline is supposed to look like for that?
I don't. I mean, I was so shocked at the long timeline for publishing that I'm not even asking for Hollywood, because these things take a long time. But I will say that I've been so inspired by their ideas, and it honestly feels like another workshop, but we're all working on the same thing. So it's really great so far.
And why was it important to you to be involved in the screenplay? Because that's got to be a little bit scary, too.
Oh, it totally is. I just asked. I just felt like, I don't want to give this up yet. Is this possible? And it was really important to put it in the hands of producers of color who, you know, in this case were really wonderful to me. And I also really love film, and I'm so excited to see what we can achieve on film that maybe was a little bit harder on the page. So I'm really excited.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see it, although who knows when, but I will be there. And we can't wait for future work from you, too. Kylie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kylie Reed, her debut novel is Such a Fun Age, and she is a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop. She will be in Iowa City Friday night reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.